Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
How's everyone doing? Good. So tonight's topic is stillness and activity. Of course, there are many ways to go about talking about this. I'll come at it through the experiential view. Experiential. One of my students asked me to talk about this, so. Of course, she's curious from the angle of when should we act? When should we take action? When should we remain still, not take any action when we see certain phenomena? That's her primary concern, but I'll extend this to other aspects. This question actually reminds me of a lot of the common questions that I get. When is compassion suitable? When should we help others? When should we take care of ourselves, not act? Questions like this. And the thing is that there is no standard answer to them. Right? And that's because everyone's different. Everyone have their own inclination, disposition, you know, karmically, personality-wise. So some people are more inclined to be more active, involved in activism, socially inclined, while others are kind of more tuned in to their own interests. So you can't really set up some kind of standard to ask us to be one way or another. So Buddha Dharma has no standards like that. So that's why you see in the early scriptures, the Mahayana scriptures as well, different practitioners, whether they're arhats, bodhisattvas, or ordinary people, they all have their personality traits, and they all have their aptitudes. And this goes on to even after your awakening. So you see some of the arhats. Some of the arhats. They're really just aloof. from things, whereas some other arhats, very engaged, very compassionate. So why is that? Well, because they have their own disposition. Primarily, karmic dispositions. So we're people, we're human beings, and we have a history, and this history has shaped us in a particular way. Okay? This is cause and effect. Causes and conditions. So, now that said, when it comes to the experience of our minds, for ordinary people whose minds are undisciplined, untrained, and what I mean by this is, you know, they've not developed concentration, purposeful concentration development. Right? And they have all of their lives allow their minds to run free from topic, subject to subject, influenced by, you know, the conditioning of the environment. So the environment is favorable, they're pretty happy. The environment is challenging, and they feel maybe threatened, maybe a little bit of angst, stress. So their sense of well-being is completely dictated by the external environment. So that's what I mean by an undisciplined, untrained mind. So in this sense, you know, people, we are basically subjected to the ups and downs of life. The mind is always moving from one thing to another. It may be a logical flow, you know, tangentially, right? As many of you will know, you know, you think about, what am I going to do next, for example? You know, you think, maybe I'm going to get something to eat. And then maybe that will lead to a restaurant. Oh yeah, last week I ate someplace. So last week the restaurants are closed. We're on lockdown. We couldn't, but I really missed that restaurant. And then that thought will lead to something else. Maybe the menu. And then that thought will lead to 10,000 miles away in some other place. That reminds me of a food that I ate in the other side of the world, the globe. You know, that's really those ethnic food, you know, maybe Costa Rica or Taiwan, or some Japanese sushi. The mind, there is some logical flow, cause and effect, but it's just uncontrolled. The mind is always moving. Now, when the mind is constantly moving, now you may have an agenda, wholesome agenda, to help people, to help everyone. But if the mind is actually contingent upon all the kind of moving parts of the external environment, conditioned by the ups and downs of life, mediated by our sense faculties. So all of these six sense faculties, continue moving parts, right? Eye, nose, tongue, body, mind, in the brain. And then the external world, which is constantly moving, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, thought. And then the corresponding cognitive moments from the contacts of sense faculty, sense object. So normally people are just swirled around in this vortex of conditions. So they see something unpleasant, the corresponding cognitive moment is just vexations, anger, or jealousy, or a sense of righteousness. They see unfair, injustice outside. The mind is turned. The mind is turned by it. Right? When the mind is turning, moving, by all of these moving parts, it's unstable. Whatever judgment you have, unreliable. Because what you will see is partial view. Based on what? Your own ideas, your own opinion, your own judgment of other people. So, that's how we normally live. So there's no real balance between motion and stillness, activity. There's just perpetual activities, ups and down. Fragmented thinking. Yeah. Mediated by how they feel. The kind of undercurrent tone, how they feel. And that feeling, the undercurrent tone of their interior state is actually mediated by the external environment, right? Mediated by their bodily experience. So who's the master? You actually have autonomy. You may feel you have some kind of autonomy. It's my thinking, my opinion, my experience of this. So you feel the kind of, there's a subject there. As soon as you go beneath the layer of that, very quickly you discover you're actually not your own. Your subjective experience, knowledge, perception, feelings, it's just completely dependent on many different things, some of which you're not even aware of consciously. Okay. So, for example, your body doesn't feel good. Right? And that's actually very subtly influencing your mood, this undercurrent tone. And then whatever you perceive outside, that you mediated by that. So, when someone may say hi to you because you're not really aware of how you actually feel, you may ignore the person or have a negative opinion on that person. So all of these subtle conditions are present. So most people are not aware of, in tune with how they actually feel, what they're actually experiencing concretely. All the workings of causes and conditions. So their emotion, their rage. What is stillness? What is stillness? Stillness does not take on any particular form. Right? People that meditate will know, maybe beginners sit in meditation. Is there stillness? Mind is turning, jumping from one topic to another. Right? Then they catch themselves, they remind themselves. You can't go back to the mat. Movement, motion, continuously. And the momentary glimpses of stillness we really savor that, right? The sense of peace, just being at ease, needing nothing from the outside. So it's like a child eating a chocolate. So every once in a while, you get to taste the chocolate, really savor it. Right? Unfortunately, you know, people eat that chocolate of stillness, pleasant. And then they start to grasp onto it. They start to think about it, ruminate, you know, discursive thinking, sort of build a whole story about it. And then they're not eating chocolate anymore. So stillness is very rare. In your stillness, there's a sense of peace, there's openness. So there needs to be a balance. At least we have to begin to cultivate the ability to be still. And I don't mean necessarily inactivity. As I said, stillness doesn't take on a particular form, like a seated meditation form. Right? Stillness refers primarily here to the absence of the fluctuations of the mind, the heart, right? With fragmented thinking, wandering thoughts, discursiveness in an undisciplined way. So if we live like that, it'd be very hard to make any right decision or judgment. So sometimes I give the analogy of surfing. Surfing. Living our lives completely at the mercy of the ups and downs of life, fragmentation of our thoughts and feelings. It's like surfing on the wave. It's endless, endless waves. And most of the time, people are just trying to survive, trying to stay on the surfboard. Very often, they're just thrown off. And they try to stay afloat. So meditation practice, training the mind, heart. It's like learning how to dive. You no longer live, struggle at the level of the ceaseless waves of ups and downs. You start to dive into the ocean. The more concentrated you are, free from the comings and going of wandering thoughts, the more you have a flavor of stillness, the more you actually appreciate the vastness, the openness of the ocean. It contains everything. Right? If we live at the level of the waves, all we see is just a wave. We're just trying to stay afloat on top of this particular wave that we're riding. We really can't appreciate what's coming or what's behind us. In the ocean, it contains all the waves, but you're not disturbed by the wave. There's silence. There's stillness. Within stillness, there's movement. It can be movement. Right? It's not a fixed thing. It's just water. Right? Those of you who gone scuba diving or swimming in the ocean, get a sense of what I'm talking about with this analogy. So we need to develop this balance because we really can't survive. We really can't live our lives just by the end of our wits, by the skills that we've acquired, the ways we learn to manipulate, react to the external environment. You can't live like this. So we really have to get to the source, the stillness of our mind, of our heart. Then we will be able to see in vivid clarity everything that's moving. Not just this myopic vision of what's in front of us. We can see what needs to be done, what can be done in our current situation. Relating this to the self, the sense of self. Now, when Buddhist scripture talk about self, they're not really referring to like only kind of one fixed sense of self. Right? There are all kinds of self. In fact, most of the time, for most people, their self is fragmented, incongruent, governed by motion, activity, coming and going, having and lacking, wanting and needing, right? Gaining and losing. So it's just constant motion. Right? And it's fragmented because it's self-referential. To this circumstance, I respond that way. To another circumstance, the self is another way. To your parents, you automatically kind of assume the role of a son or a daughter. Right? Certainly they see you that way. Right? So it's kind of the condition just formats you into a particular way. Right? To, and you may be a teacher. So in front of students in your classroom, at universities or school or whatever, you're not a son or daughter. You have another sense of self, right? To a spouse, you're another sense. So the self is fragmented, right? Constantly changing, circumstantial. Also, there are other sense of self, spatially oriented sense of self. Right? And there's a narrative sense of self. The subject, this is me, looking at a picture of you 2 years old and seeing a mirror now. Right? There's a sense of continuity, that kind of subject. So relating motion and stillness, most people, they're in complete chaos, motion, fragmentation. Right? No autonomy, no stillness. And the sense of self is fragmented, incongruent, circumstantial. So it's very unsafe way to live, unpredictable, precarious. So the more you dive into the ocean, the more you discover the peace within. Less and less contingent on sensory data, objects. So your peace start to develop in and of itself, just that peace. And other people may say something, may do something, you're still at peace. So your sense of happiness and peace, maybe the key to your happiness, your peace, is not given to someone else. You have the key. You're the master. You hold the key. So imagine living your life in which the key to your happiness is kind of given to someone else. What if that person disappears, dies, or runs off with your fortune or whatnot? Then you're in trouble. You're totally not at peace then. So developing stillness within will generate a sense of peace. More and more, you're, instead of being fragmented, you're becoming unified. Your body and mind, your heart and mind, your actions of speech and physical response with how you actually feel become more and more congruent, more and more unified. And more and more kind of free from survival tactics and manipulation, more and more innocent, congruent. So that's the benefit of concentration. Concentration will lead to unification. That these experiences, more and more we will discover our resourcefulness, our just openness, connectedness to everything. And less live in the head, the thoughts fragmented, discursive ruminations. So if you don't understand this principle behind practice, then even if you practice for many years, you still attach to the form. Sitting, you're all good. As soon as you're engaging some activity, your colleagues, fellow practitioners, your teacher, your parents say something to you, your mind is just not at ease, not at peace. So if you go deeper, you will discover that IAG, it's all good. Everything. Everything is at peace. Not really the external environment's at peace. Right? Everything's perfect. I don't mean that. It means you're freed. You're at peace. Your experience is no longer contingent, dependent on whether everything is going your way or not. Right? You're just at peace. Now, experientially, when you're in this state, this may sound strange to some of you, but when you're in this state, when you see movement and activity in the world, it's as if they're not moving. I really can't explain this logically because this defies logic, right? Logic is contingent on words. Words are divisive. Either you have peace or not peace, black or white. Even the word gray, gray is just a word. It doesn't really describe anything, right? Well, having, lacking, gaining, losing. Right? You can't really explain this to words. But experientially, you're less contingent, dependent, subjected by words and language, by notions. Your heart is at peace. And perceptually, when you experience the world, what you experience does not stir up what in Chan we call second thought. First thought is just perception. It's kind of direct perception. In the Yogacara consciousness only school, they talk about valid perception, direct valid perception. It's just this. But most people, everyone experienced this, but it's so fleeting and so fast, and their mind is so habituated in fragmentation, you know, discursive thinking that quickly it passes, right? And then you just second thought, come on, it's good or bad, labeling, discrimination, mind is moving again. But if you are grounded, rooted in stillness. When you see external environment moving, it's as if it's not moving. People talking to you, as if not talking. Yet, you still respond. So within stillness, there's motion. But you can't really separate between motion and stillness. Within stillness, there's motion. Within motion, there's stillness. So there's no separation now between this and that. Me over here, whereas all of you over there. So very hard to understand if you try to imagine what I'm talking about. But you have to experience it yourself. Now, can you do research, complex activities when you use your hand? Yeah, you could do it. Let alone simple activity. Now, most times, practitioners, they can do simple activities, like washing dishes, cleaning. Yeah. On the method, they're one with the activity, with the stillness, and they're moving. Okay? Motion within stillness. But complex situations start to lose it. Why is that? Because that's a kind of samadhi experience. It's a kind of unification experience. The unification experience is come and go. Unless you're truly freed. When self-attachment drops away. In a state of no self. You align yourself with your true nature. Then you can do it in complex situations. You can talk, you can give a class, you can do research, you can use your head. There's no self in you. It's at peace. It's almost like, see, all words are problematic. I want to say, it's almost like there's no mind, no heart. Now, if I say that, you think, no heart? You have no feelings anymore? You have no thinking process? No, you have all of that. It's very hard to describe. It's as if there's no heart. Nothing to move. It's not that things do not move you. Your mind does not waver. It's not that. That's like samadhi. What I'm talking about is there's nothing to be moved. There's nothing to be moved. There is no heart. There is no mind to be moved. Is there a response? Perfect response. Apropos to what needs to be done, what can be done. Because of that, the activities that come out of that, no vexations. Because it's no vexations, this state is beyond the grasp of samsara. This is nirvana. So inactivity, this is called nirvana with residue. So like the arhats, like the awakened bodhisattvas, like the Buddha. They're still carrying out their things. They're giving Dharma talks. You think the Buddha doesn't use head to think? Their brain still works. They know exactly what the student needs. They give the right antidote, right teaching. Everything works perfectly fine. But every activity, selfless, nirvanic, it doesn't belong to samsara. It doesn't belong to the world of coming and going, samsara. The ocean of suffering. What is that? Coming, going, having, lacking, wanting, needing, gaining, losing, living, dying. Right? Contingent on the sensory faculties, manipulated by what they see, hear, touch, feel, the smell, everything. There's all these moving parts. No longer tethered to that. That's freedom. Now, can you call that stillness? No, you can't really call that stillness anymore. Can you call that motion? You can't really call that motion either. Whatever you describe, whatever you say is wrong. The realm of inconceivability. So tonight I've talked about different levels, if you will. When is it to act? When is it not to act? At the ordinary level. That depends on your own aptitude, inclination, your own disposition, karmic or personality-wise. If you're the person, activism is good, then you do it. You can't require everyone else to behave the same way you do. Right? So, that's one level. Another level relating to our hearts, our minds, relating to practice. We have to learn to cultivate stillness, cultivate the ability to even momentarily be free from all these contingent moving parts of the sixth sense faculty, sixth sense object, and our responses of the six cognitive moments. It's called the 18 realms in Buddhism. Okay? Temporarily have some peace within that, cultivate that stillness. How? Concentration. You can't cultivate concentration by thinking your way through it, reading about it. You gotta experience it. You gotta practice it. So formal meditation. Formal, maybe even recitation practice. You know, reading scriptures, but concentrated. A little more complicated, a little more complex, of course, because you're reading words, but at least you're staying on topic of this particular scripture, chanting or reading. Right? That's concentration too. More and more from complex forms of concentration to simplify concentration. Then you will discover the depth of stillness. That's like diving into the ocean. You're not surfing on the wave anymore. Just trying to survive, trying to stay afloat, concentrate. The more complicated the method, chanting scriptures, doing some things, you can gain concentration, but the depth of concentration is shallow. The simpler the method, very difficult. But once you get the hang of it, the depth of concentration, deeper, diving. So unified mind, from scattered, fragmented, to concentrated, a whole variety of concentration, to unification. And unification to, and this, so far we talk about, you know, daily activities, when to be active, when to be still, not respond. That just comes from, you know, kind of social skills, common sense. Right? You learn how to relate to others, when to be quiet, when it's not time to say something, you know, when it's time to say something. That's, you just learn the social skills. Right? Learn to use your head. Learn to think about stuff. Then we talk about practice, activity, stillness, from concentration to unification. And then the last thing I talk about is something beyond stillness and motion, selflessness, nirvana, freedom, not passivity, not pessimism. Complete engagement, yet you're free.
Thank you for listening to the Dharma Talk by Chan Teacher Guo Gu. Hood is the founder and teacher at Tallahassee Chung Center in the United States. You can find more talks from him at tallahasseechung.org.